Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati. I'm now joined by Jared Sutton, one of our college basketball insiders, played at Mizzou, now works as an analyst on the SEC Network, and works as an NBA scout. Hello, Jared Sutton. How are you?
I'm good, Stephen. How are you?
You're in trouble, Jared.
Uh-oh.
You're in trouble, bud. I tried to...
I'm not going
to
yell at him now.
Okay.
Grunny provided me
Thank
therapy.
You.
But I was going to yell at you.
Oh, really?
Because what? I get mad when people Twitter jinx something.
Uh-oh.
And I felt like you got real positive about Mizzou and a run they went on.
Uh-huh.
And you tweeted something out.
Uh-huh.
And then from that point on.
Oh, you're talking about last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yep. And then like right when you tweeted it, Auburn went on a 23-4
We called that around.
Right.
You bucated it.
Yep.
You bucated it.
Take a few that.
I think I said something like, this is Missouri basketball.
Yeah.
They're hanging around.
Right. This is Missouri. They,
yeah. I know what you're talking about.
They got down to a 1 point. Like, this is Mizzou basketball and all these. And I mean, as soon as the.
It was like a 7-0 run in seconds. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that
you live and learn, Jared.
That's right. Welcome to the club, Jared.
Yeah. I think we are all around here very, you know, be careful before you push them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I thought about that, too, because I'm like, you know, thankfully we're only down 5 at half, and then there was 12 minutes to play. It's a 2-point game. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is kind of what Missouri does.
They got it down to 1 with like 12 and a half minutes left,
yeah.
And then just got run off the floor.
18-2 run, I believe, so.
Whatever it was ugly. Okay, so let's get into that. So last night, Missouri was coming off not a good offensive performance against Texas A&M, where they only scored 49 points, but a big opportunity game for them to beat the first-place team in the SEC, the highest-ranked team in the SEC, and they had them at home. And for a while, I'm with you. It looked like that was kind of the formula that they were going to follow. Hang in there, then maybe get hot from three, make some plays down the stretch, and come away with a really big win, kind of like what they did with Tennessee the week before. But, I mean, when they got it down to 1, crowd's into it, everyone's feeling good. It's like Auburn flipped a switch and went into another gear that Missouri didn't have, and what was, I guess, maybe the most disappointing thing, body language. Just everything about Missouri is like they gave in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They gave in to Auburn's pressure and Auburn's intensity. And I don't know what better way to put it. I mean, Auburn just ran them off the floor. They were hitting shots. They were blocking shots. They were getting to the loose balls. There were 3 times that Auburn missed a shot. And you start here, because this is a bad sign when this happens more than once. Auburn misses a shot. The rebound hits the floor.
4 white jerseys around it, too.
Hits
I know
the
exactly,
floor.
Yeah.
3 different times,
yeah.
Auburn gets the rebound and turns that, I think every time they turn into a 3-pointer mm-hmm. after that. But, I mean, that'll drive Konzo Martin crazy, right?
Yep.
I just felt like there was some give. There was some effort. I don't know if they felt defeated or whatever else, but that was ugly the final 12 minutes.
Yeah, and there's not many losses that I look at for Missouri. I know the Utah game didn't shoot it well. Illinois, it didn't start well at all. Had a terrible first half, but yes, last night was disappointing. You talked about body language. I think you hit it on the head. I was very disappointed with Jeremiah Tillman in this game, a guy that I'm really high on, and gets in foul trouble. He's been in foul trouble a lot this year. But
may I read his line to everyone so people can
go
understand?
For it. Go for it.
Maybe I don't want to. Okay, 7 minutes, no shots. No free throw attempts, a rebound, 3 turnovers, and 4 fouls.
Yeah, it's not going to get it done. But there was a play that stood out to me, well, 2 actually. The foul that he picked up, I think it was his 3rd, where he fouled the 3-point shooter, and he went out there, and I watched him the entire possession.
Yes.
And he just fouled the shooter out of frustration. It just looked like the... I think the frustration of getting so many fouls called on him, and he looks like he's trying, But last night, it almost felt like he had had enough. Kind of like he was thrown in the towel of, you know what, I'm just going to go out here and I'm angry, I'm frustrated, and I don't really care about winning. Like, even the play where Auburn hits a shot, he takes the ball out of the basket, underneath his own basket, and just throws it without even looking. Jordan Geist wasn't even looking at him. They were getting pressed, actually, and he just throws the ball out of bounds and then just looks confused. And I'm thinking, that's a kid, that's a freshman, but how much longer are we going to call this guy a young freshman? I mean, he's got to learn. He's got to grow up. He's got to understand, you know, time and score and situations and understand how to play defense without fouling, because there's times in this season where Jeremiah has got some tough calls called on him. He's physical. He's an aggressive kid, and I felt for him. But last night, I didn't feel for him because it was just mental mistakes. I can live with making a physical mistake. I can't live making mental mistakes, and I know Konzo Martin can't live with that, and that was a huge piece in the game, because you need Jeremiah Tillman in a game like that. With, I know everybody want to talk about Missouri, and, oh, well, they have the size, but Auburn has so many athletes. They have explosiveness. They have guys that jump out of the gym. They pressure the basketball when we have guards that can't handle the pressure, that can't create their own shots. And another guy I'm disappointed with was Jordan Barnett. I know he shot the ball really well, but how many times, John Sunvold touched on it perfectly, how many times do we see Jordan Barnett just turn and throw the ball lackadaisically and not value the basketball? And that's a senior. That's a guy that's a veteran player that knows better. And if there's one guy on the floor, Auburn has plenty of guys that can go create their own shot. Jared Harper played point guard as best you can play point guard for an 8-minute stretch when they went on that run. But Jordan Barnett is not just a shooter, but he's confident. He's shooting the ball well. And I love that. We need a guy that can shoot it like he can. But he's also a really good athlete that can put the ball on the floor and go to the rim. He doesn't do it enough, and he's content with just shooting the ball. Why can't you be more than that? Push yourself to be better than what you're showing, because right now you're just a shooter to me, and I think you can be so much more than that.
Dave Matter tweeted last night, Konzo has told Tillman in practice repeatedly, it's not the officiating, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's absolutely right. And last night, it was Tillman.
Yeah.
Do you think he's hit a mental wall, like that freshman wall we hear about all the time? Do you think it's just like he's mentally tired?
I think Jeremiah has had the right attitude for the most part of the season. I felt like last night it was more sulking and more feeling sorry for himself, and that's what I can't handle that. I understand frustration. I understand I appreciate an effort, and you know, you want to get better, you want to improve upon it, you're watching film, you're working on it in practice. There's games that I've called Missouri in the past in non-conference play where I honestly saw him trying to buy into improving, moving his feet, using his hands. But last night, it's almost like he took so many steps back with me last night. It was more, you know, flailing his arms again like he did earlier in the season, trying to be overly physical and aggressive. And it's almost like in football when a defensive back, you know, pushes a receiver and or starts talking to a receiver to try to get him to do something or make a, you know, personal foul penalty. I felt like Auburn was kind of talking to him a little bit last night where he was trying to be overly physical, and it's right in front of an official. And it's away from the ball.
One of his fouls was on that moving screen.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
There's just, that's one of those ones
it's
where like,
always on a moving screen every game.
Yeah. And that's like when you're a guy who already has problems staying out of foul trouble.
Yep.
That's an easy way to avoid foul trouble. Just stop, you know, yep. Just don't set moving screens. That's an easy one.
And that's a great point, Nate, because it, you know, Jeremiah does get some moving screen calls on him, but that's also a problem I had last night with the guards, because sometimes moving screens are the big man's fault. They're moving their feet. But when guards don't come across a screen or a dribble handoff hip to hip and they leave airspace, big men try to overcompensate and move their feet to try to set a better screen. So in that sense, there's times where big men are trying to get their guards and wings open, and that the illegal screen should be on the guard. In last night's case, I think Jeremiah, you know, was just trying to do a little too much on that play. But so many times, Missouri in the first half was trying to run their dribble handoff action on the wing, trying to go right into a ball screen. But guess what? Teams scout you. Auburn sees that. They jumped every passing lane. They made sure that there was, you know, no tight screens. And Missouri did not cut hard. They did not flash hard. They didn't make crisp passes. They just were very...
They wilted under Auburn's pressure.
Absolutely.
Wilted.
And they were just back on their heels. For the stretch that they got back in the game, the ball movement was better. The player movement was better. They opened the floor. They spaced the floor. They had Jonte come with a flat ball screen. And they got good offense. But credit Bruce Pearl. He called a timeout. He got his guys together. And for about 8 minutes, Missouri couldn't do anything. They couldn't even enter into their secondary offense, and they couldn't even post feed in the second half.
Bruce Pearl looks like he's going to attack someone like minutes into the game. He mm-hmm. looks like he's going to just explode. Mm-hmm. And he's, again, you can say what you want about off the floor and things have already happened at Auburn, but they look like the best team in the SEC. I know their record suggests that, but there have been people that have been unwilling to believe that. That's the best team I've seen so far in the SEC.
Yeah, me too.
When they played defensively like that. And look, and I'm looking now, I wanted to make sure, Anthony McLemore, it says he's 6'7". I'm wondering if they got that. Maybe he's 7'6", because he had 6 blocks in 21 minutes. Mm-hmm. At one point, that got a little embarrassing, right?
Yep.
I mean, it was just they were intimidated. Explain that to me.
Well, it's about energy, I think. I thought Bruce Pearl said it in his postgame press conference. He told his team, look, this is a statement we can make to the league. Not a lot of teams are going to come into Mizzou Arena and beat Missouri, and that's a great sign if you're a Missouri fan, because that's what you want. You want Mizzou Arena to be a hostile environment. I thought the student section actually was terrific for Missouri. They brought, I think they were the one group that brought energy through the first 20 minutes. But I think energy from Auburn, but I also think so many times we can look at, you know, the depth chart and the media guide and look at size and strength and what's on paper, but sometimes it's about, you know, the desire to go compete. And also, you know, with Auburn, knowing that they were going to be undersized, they did an unbelievable job of not allowing themselves to get screened, not allowing themselves to get posted up, always around the glass, giving multiple efforts, not just giving one effort. So the blocking the shot, some of those were, you know, back-to-back consecutive block shots because Missouri's trying to go, you know, make a shot and try to go get the ball, but they're not going strong to the hole. And also there were opportunities where, you know, Reed Nicko had it a couple times where he got an offensive rebound. Perfect opportunity to immediately kick out, immediately, instead of holding the ball. When you hold the ball, it allows Auburn to reset. And it just too many times Missouri was not quick. They weren't playing fast. Auburn, that's how they play. They're fast. They're up-tempo. They play a great brand of basketball, and it showed last night on both ends of the floor.
So, like you said, the student section was really good, and it was. And I saw a lot of people that were covering the game, they're tweeting about it. Hey, the student section's great. They deserve credit for the atmosphere. But Missouri does get criticized for lack of crowd intensity, lack of crowd. Mm-hmm. You see so many of gold seats empty. And I feel like there's, I mean, I don't know. I don't like to stereotype, but I feel like, can you be under 65 and have good seats there? Or do you have to be? I mean, I feel like every time like I see the crowd in the back, I always expect to see someone knitting or drinking soup. I mean, I don't. Like, what?
Right. Right.
From a thermos.
Why?
You know, I think it has something to do a little bit with, I heard Soren Petro yesterday talking about how he was at a meeting next to a Mizzou fan that was following the Kansas-Oklahoma game and how he was just so consumed with that game. I think there's that fan base that does, you know, miss the Big 12 rivalries that has that type of feel when Iowa State, Kansas, K-State, those type of teams came to town. It's still different. Who's Missouri's rivalry? I still think that's part of it for some of the older fan base. But, you know, the game that I went to against Florida, you know, there was pretty much the lower bowl standing for a majority of the second half, which was great to see. You know, I think the weeknight games are tough from a Kansas City-St. Louis perspective. Not an excuse at all. And I think Gabe DeArmond said a great comment last night, too, about how there's not an excuse anymore for the students. I mean, there was an excuse in years past because the product was bad. Now the product is good, and I think Konzo really understands that in order for his program to keep going where I think it should go and where he thinks it should go, Mizzou Arena's got to be a tough place to play. Bruce Pearl knows that. A lot of coaches that have been around college basketball know how Mizzou Arena can be when that place is packed and electric and loud. I mean, the building is shaped and designed for crowd noise. You know, I know a lot of people commented to me last night about can they change it to where the students are not just in one area behind, I think it's the West basket. Can they be more, you know, on the sides of the court or on both sides, both behind both goals? I don't know. I think that's something that is honestly about donors and obviously the TSF and making donations and getting season tickets. But it's been sporadic, to answer your question. Some games it's been there, some games it's not.
So let me give a shout-out to Bruce McKinney, who's a friend of mine who is the president of the Missouri Alumni Association right now. And he and his wife actually came up to me this weekend.
Oh, he's no friend of yours, I can
tell
you that.
Well, that's probably true. His wife, Teresa, though, they're both, you know, they go to the games. Mm-hmm. She approached me because she was mad that they were at the game, last game that this became a topic. And she showed me a picture of the stands because what you see on TV is right behind the visitor's bench, there's a whole bunch of empty seats. And they're bright yellow, and so they stick out like a sore thumb. And when you're watching on TV, that might be the most prominent seats you see in the camera shot the whole time. So it looks like the best seats in the house are empty. And she said, hey, those are the visiting team's seats. And nobody from Auburn or Tennessee is coming to these games. And like, okay, for example, when you go to Allen Fieldhouse, the benches are on the camera side.
Mm-hmm.
So the visiting teams, you know, and those seats will get sold at Allen Fieldhouse anyways. But the point is you wouldn't see them if they weren't. Like, no one sees those seats. Maybe can Missouri move the benches to the other side or something? Because I think it makes it – she showed me the crowd, and it looked way better in person than it does on TV. She said, look, the place was almost completely full, but the people watching on TV think that the best seats in the house are empty.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a problem to me. Is there something they could do about that?
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, by the way? Is that fair?
Yeah,
assessment?
That's fair. It's a good point.
And I noticed in the Tennessee game, that place was loud. I mean,
yeah.
That place was rocking.
Yeah.
But nobody from the there were no Tennessee fans behind their bench, so it looked like there were no Missouri fans there because they're just empty seats right, you know, court side.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, I think, solutions to it. The reality is they're getting better crowds than they've got in the last 3 years, which is good. The excitement's back. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm surrounding Konzo Martin. So the direction's heading in the right path. It's hard to believe, though. It's still Konzo's first year. I mean, I was thinking last night, you know, he's counting so much on guys that aren't his guys. I mean, he's counting on Jordan Geis. He's counting on Kevin Purrier. He's counting on Terrence Phillips, Jordan Barnett, Colin Van Leer, all these guys, and he's getting the most out of them. Which I think is a testament to him.
Cullen Van Leer had 4 turnovers in 11 minutes.
Yep, and
story that.
And he's got to play him in a game like that because Jeremiah's in foul trouble, and the game is so fast paced. I think Terrence Phillips was back on his heels last night, but I think the fans again at the Florida game that I was at, they were great. They were terrific students, and the donor section and the lower bowl, it was great. Tennessee, they were loud. I think there might have been off to look, but I think the attendance was more for Auburn last night than it was for that Tennessee game. But the energy was just sucked out of that building because I didn't think Missouri brought the energy. I didn't. I thought Auburn had all the momentum in the first half. I think the fans, although, and this is something for any fan base, I mean, when you're playing at home, your fans got to give you some life too. I do think that there's a part of last night that is a little bit on. The students brought it. Who else brought it in that building last night?
Here are the numbers for turnovers. So it does not allow you to pick on anyone for turning the basketball over. This was, you've heard about balanced scoring. This was balanced turnovers. Jordan Barnett, 3. Jontay Porter, 3. Jeremiah Tillman, 3 in 7 minutes. Jordan Geis, 3. Cassius Robertson, 2. Cullen Van Leer, 4 in 11 minutes. Terrence Phillips, 2 in 9 minutes. So that really, they all chipped in. That's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a coach, to look at that.
A lot of them were mental turnovers,
right?
Too. Yeah.
I mean, just throwing the basketball where you think a guy might be, but you're not sure, so just throw it anyway.
A lot of it is trust, too. You know, Jordan Geis had a turnover. He was trying to throw it to Terrence Phillips. Terrence went back door. He just throws it. Right to the front row of fans there. Yeah. I mean, that's all trust. That's all just, I think, hey, I don't want the ball. And another thing, too, Steven, this is the big part for me last night. Auburn had the better athleticism. They had the more talent. They had guys that could create space. And they just, it was blood in the water for them.
Better athleticism. They were stronger. They were faster. They were more intense. They were everything.
Mm-hmm.
They were, whatever.
And you're used to seeing Missouri fight back and claw back and be tough and defend. And they were at that 12-minute mark, 11-minute mark.
After that,
they just gave in. They got hit, and Auburn said, nope, we're taking over. And Jared Harper was outstanding. Hey, a couple of shots he hit, give him credit. He made some great plays down the stretch.
Let's take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've had people tweeting at me that Konzo should have tried to grind it out a little bit more, slow down the pace against Auburn with their athletes and their willingness to run up and down the floor. Was that an issue? I mean, it's easy to say that.
Yeah.
And you see the height advantage. You think you have a post advantage, but Jeremiah Tillman is not available for anything. Mm-hmm. He's just not. He can't stay on the floor. And so, did they really have an advantage in the paint? Because boy, they sure didn't look like it.
No.
Getting every shot rejected. Is there something to criticize as far as Konzo Martin's approach to the game?
So I know he said to the media in his media availability, I think it was yesterday or a couple days or 2 days ago, was that he wants his team to push pace and play in transition and get out in the open floor and create opportunities. And I agree with that. And with any team, I think you have to be able to push the ball and I know that they lack, you know, the elite level point guard that can really create and make plays.
But this is like a version of Hoiberg's offense
at
Iowa State.
Yes, it is.
Right?
It is. The only thing that I had a problem with, honestly, was in the first half when they have a game plan. You know, this is what I always was impressed with about guys I played with my senior year with Kimmy and Marcus and those guys, was that we had a game plan and we'd run sets. And any time that you got to be a player on the floor and you got to have an IQ and a sense of what the defense is doing, that sometimes when you run a play and it's designed to go a certain direction or to a certain player and the defense takes that away, you have to have the ability to counter. You have to have the ability to, especially when it's in within the structure of your offense, to, hey, maybe the ball can't be swung to the right side of the floor. Go back to the left side of the floor, clear it out and ball screen. You know, get creative. Just don't stand. That's my frustration sometimes, is especially guys like Jordan Barnett that just hang out in the corner when guards are getting pressured and Jordan Geist is working his tail off and everybody just stares at him. You know, that's not helping anybody. It's not helping Jordan. It's not helping you. It's not helping the team. I think as far as Konzo, you know, the pace of play last night, the pace up tempo, that benefits Auburn in that game. You know, I think, but Missouri, though, when they slowed the pace down and they were trying to go into their half court early offense, there's not a lot of movement. And the times that they did have good offense, and usually when we've seen Missouri have good offense so far, it's when they have the side pick and roll, when they use Jonte, when they space the floor and are not on top of each other. And then also it's on the players. I mean, we can talk about Konzo and what the style of play and what they're running. But if a player is not going to cut hard, if he's not going to screen with purpose, if I'm a shooter and I'm just kind of coming off a screen and standing straight up and I'm not going hip to hip and I'm not setting my man up, I'm not sticking my head underneath the basket, that's not on Konzo. I'm not executing. I'm not playing the game the right way. I mean, to create offense, to create opportunities for yourself and for teammates, you got to move, you got to screen, you got to play with some urgency. There was none of that through the first 20 minutes. I mean, kind of going through the motions. Jeremiah Tillman is I don't know where his head was at in the game. I know Konzo talked about that.
He was over on the bench with the rest of his body.
But Konzo said this about Jordan Barnett after Texas A&M. You know, he challenged him, said, I don't know where Jordan Barnett was in this game. And that's my frustration with Jordan Barnett, is the guy can go for 28 points and knock down six threes against Florida, and Michael White can call him one of the most improved players and playing at an all-league level. And then he shoots the ball five times. He can't do that. He's got to be aggressive and go to the hole. If I'm Konzo, I'm living with Jordan Barnett going to the rim and getting a shot blocked. I'll take that. But I will not take him back on his heels when a guy that's 6 inches shorter than he is literally pressuring him to where he's back and throwing the ball to the tiger head and nobody's there. And then doesn't want to go sprint back in defense. That's something that's going to have to get corrected. And Konzo will. They're going to watch the tape. And Konzo's going to have to make some changes. I think he's done that when Missouri has played bad. They've responded. They just didn't do it last night for a consistent stretch. It was just for 6-7 minutes. They didn't do it enough.
Okay, so between now and basically the next 9 days, a little over a week, you've got at Mississippi State, at Alabama, and then home against Kentucky. If they win 2 out of 3, then they're back, I think in the NCAA tournament, and they've made up for this home loss, because that means you have split on the road and you beat Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Are they capable of that, or is that asking too much?
Well, guess what? All three of those teams you just mentioned, all three of them are really athletic. All three of them have length. All three of them have guys that can create their own shot. Nick Weatherspoon, Quindary Weatherspoon, Lamar Peters at Mississippi State just gave Kentucky a pretty good game in Lexington. You know, with Kentucky, Kevin Knox, you know, 6'9 shooter that's going to challenge Jordan Barnett. That's going to be a good matchup. But again, Kentucky's not shooting the three ball that well. They shot it better against Mississippi State. They have some vulnerability to them. And then we talk about Alabama, getting Colin Sexton back is big for them. They have Donta Hall, who's a long, improved big man. Can Kevin Puryear score over length? Can Jeremiah Tillman stay out of foul trouble? You know, Jonte is tough because he's so much is dependent on him on defense to rebound, to get deflections, to block shots. He did that last night. I actually thought he had a pretty good game defensively. Offensively, he's not yet there yet where he can shoot the ball on the move. He's got to be stationary. He has to have his feet set. He has to have time. It has to be off pick and pop. He cannot curl a screen. They put him in some bad positions, I thought, last night. He shot a couple threes that I thought, there's no chance of that going in because he's not ready for that yet. He's just not. He's still in the development growth process. So it just depends on what Missouri team is going to show up, because those three teams are similar to Auburn in a lot of ways. I don't think they're as fast as Auburn. But, I mean, my gosh, Colin Sexton's an NBA player. If he's struggling with injuries. If he comes back fully healthy, that's going to be tough. And then they got John Petty, who is a stud, Mr. Alabama, high school 2 years running before he came to Alabama. Lethal shooter, gym rat, tough. I mean, Avery Johnson's a great coach. So they got their work cut out for him. If they want to go to the NCAA tournament, they got to get some resume-boosting wins. They got to get some quality wins. That's where they're at. They only have Tennessee right now. They got to get more quality wins.
How much of this do you think is Bob Sutton's fault?
All of it.
Well,
I'll take that one for you. All of it.
Mm-hmm. No relation, by the way. I just got to throw that
out. Well, dude, that's not what I've heard.
So. By the way, shout out to Frank Martin's South Carolina team getting a win at Florida.
They're improved.
And that's one of the reasons earlier in the show I was talking about that, how I was so excited after that game because that was the doubleheader. It started off on SEC Network with Florida and South Carolina. Oh, look. Now Florida has two losses, and if Missouri beats Auburn, they'll have two losses, and Missouri will only be one game out.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of that one, Stan.
Right to the wire with Florida. I mean, that's what's even more disappointing. It was right there.
Yeah.
If they would have won that game last night, they have another resume-building win, and they are one game out in the loss column in the SEC.
Yeah, that's what's tough about the West Virginia game and the Florida game that Missouri loses is you're so close. You play really well for majority of the game. You're the better team for the majority of the game. And you don't close those games. That's really important because you're going to have nights like this. Missouri's not necessarily, I don't want to call them a young basketball team. I mean, they do have some young guys, obviously, that they count on. But they have some veteran pieces. And so you got to take care of business when you have the opportunity there. And they just didn't close. And that's going to come back to haunt them but there's still plenty of time.
Right.
They got time.
They win two of the next three. They're right back in it.
And when you talk about teams in March, they play their best basketball in February.
And look, watching that game between South Carolina and Florida, Missouri won at South Carolina.
Yeah,
they took Florida right down to the wire,
and smacked South Carolina too.
Right. So they, you know, on their home floor, so they could do it. But they're mentally, they were beaten last night. Mentally,
oh yeah,
they were beaten mentally. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get your thoughts on what Nate calls the Sunflower Showdown that's coming up just in a matter of days. Very excited. Although, I'll be honest with you, I love both these guys. They're, I feel like, tense. You tighten your belt a little bit?
Yeah, a little more on the edge of our seat now.
Maybe they pucker up a little bit?
You know, a little puckered.
look at Jake. We'll hear what Jake Pounders has to say. Let me tell you something. I don't want to talk to Jake Gutierrez in the next segment. I want to say hello to Jake Pounders and see what he has to say about the Sunflower Showdown coming up after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Please play the intro liner for the Sunflower Showdown coming up.
All right, the Sunflower Showdown.
We have the Big 12 SEC Challenge.
How do you do that so fast?
Coming up.
It's a pro.
This Saturday. And I don't care. But Monday, I do care. I do care to watch Big Monday in Manhattan. You can listen to the game right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. If Kansas State wins, they'll be tied with Kansas. And on Tuesday, that will be, they'll make for an interesting environment in the offices of Union Broadcasting.
All right, the Sunflower Showdown.
What do you think of K-State's chances? I know they K-State has this big showdown against Georgia for the SEC Big 12 Challenge that thousands of people will be glued to. And
we are talking about K-State!
Kansas and Texas A&M's. Boy, that's a great matchup. Can't wait. I think Nate's going to be there. He splurged for $1,000 center court seats to go see that matchup he's been talking about. Kansas State on Monday night. What do you think will happen in Manhattan?
Well, it depends.
And don't say something just to appease these two.
No.
That's Frank Fraschello about it.
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, both teams have big games this weekend in Big 12 SEC Challenge. Yeah,
gigantic games.
Yeah. Huge trap games, by the way.
Absolutely, yeah. Texas A&M, no joke, Robert Williams, everybody back.
Georgia's not bad either.
Adbin Gilder, Georgia's not bad either. Got a double overtime win against Arkansas. Steven's just frustrated.
Long
night.
I have to watch these teams because Missouri's in the SEC. You don't need to pump them up to me. Mm-hmm.
No,
it's like watching paint dry.
I'm less pumping up Georgia and more pumping up the opportunity Georgia has.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they can catch K-State, a pretty solid team to this point, one of the better teams in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah.
And they can get caught looking 2 days ahead.
Yonte Maton could take over a game in a matchup against Kansas State. Ooh. But anyway, that's another story. But when you look ahead, KU, K-State.
See what this money line number is. Yeah. And might
rematch game. I still think it's going to come down to the final 4 minute period of late game execution. I think Kansas State will be in the game. And, you know, Devontae Graham and Svi Mykhailiuk and guys that have been in this situation and played K-State and understand playing in Bramlage.
Would you like to poke a doke?
That's going to probably be used often, yes. I think you can look forward to Poker Doke.
Do you have any issue with that?
Sunflower Showdown.
I don't.
Doing what you got to do to try to get a win, right?
Yeah.
So you got to, I mean, if you're in the same situation, you're Bruce Weber, you got to do it, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I watch Doke shoot free throws, his, you know, so shooting a free throw, it's all about the three C's.
Do you think his form is off?
Yeah, he's got some wrist mobility issues. He's got some wrist mobility issues.
You are one of the nicest dudes ever.
Mobility issues.
Okay, yeah. So now I've heard. I said I was not going to say this on the air until I heard five different people say it.
I have the same problem.
Now I've heard five different people say it. And so now I'm going to say it, right?
Should he
shoot granny style?
No.
Underhand free throws.
No.
I've actually had five people ask me that now.
No. I mean,
I'd love it so much if he did. Standing ovation.
Bill Self says that that's not going to.
I do think.
So the people on Twitter, they're going to have to look for another.
They're going to have to stand
solution.
Down.
Doing the poke-a-doke or hack-a-shack, whatever that is, it's a coach, you know, trying to be strategic, and it's annoying. It's similar to like how high school coaches hold the ball in.
Into
quarters
with no shot clock.
With no shot clock, it's annoying, it's frustrating, but it's strategy. And so I mean honestly I understand Lon Kruger making that call. It was the right decision. I do think Bill Self, looking back, probably should have used a timeout and got Doke out of the game. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be put in that situation again. And if I'm Bill Self, I'm sure he's doing this. Pressure free throws late in practice, pressure free throws when you're tired. You know, making the team, you know, put the team on the line, 1-1, have to make a free throw to get out of practice.
Who's the worst free throw shooter that you played with?
John Underwood.
And so what were some of the what did they try in practice? How did they
So Mike Anderson practices, we'd go for about 2.5 hours. We'd have these period stretches where we'd go 6 minute periods for about 4 or 5 periods. So everybody was tired. You're pressing, you're working on your press, and obviously our practices were just running, sprinting constantly. So in the practices, you're already tired, and he'd put everybody in the baseline, and he'd call out specific guys to shoot free throws. And every now and then, you know, he'd go with his best free throw shooters first. But at the end, if you missed if it was a 1-on-1 situation, so if you made the free throw, you were off the line. So you just shot one. But if you missed the free throw, everybody ran, and you didn't get off the free throw line until you made a free throw. And I remember John Underwood being on that free throw line for probably 10 attempts. And you just it was also a good team-building exercise because the team pumped him full of confidence. You know, Doak's struggling with the confidence issue. That's not being comfortable at the free throw line, obviously. But he's got to have his teammates pick him up, too, in that situation because he is an important player on this team. And another thing, too, in that Oklahoma-Kansas game that nobody wants to talk about is Kansas absolutely broke down defensively. You know, they were supposed to switch the ball screen with Trae Young. Manic spaces the floor. He gets a wide-open look. I mean, Kansas still has a chance to win that game if they just guard and defend. Usually what Kansas does is getting stops, and they broke down. So we can talk about the Polka Doak, and it's probably going to be a topic of conversation moving forward with Kansas. But it's in this Sunflower Showdown again, it's going to be late-game execution. Can Bruce Weber close a game out with a lead against Kansas in his own building?
So now everyone, all the talk at KU is the Polka Doak. Were you aware, how long ago was it now, when Nate was in a fraternity at Kansas, he tried to utilize the mate with Nate on campus.
I was not aware of this, no. Go on.
But the point is he tried. The Polka Doak was successful. Several times.
Coronal mass ejection.
That was his late game strategy, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. That's just what I hear. I was never there.
Back to the drawing board.
Either was I.
Right. So, who's your pick? You got to pick the Sun. If you come on this show, you have to pick the Sunflower Showdown.
I'll go K-State. Barry Brown, Dean Wade playing really well. A lot of confidence.
I don't know how they guard Dean Wade. I think that's the biggest question in the game.
But you know,
right, Sunflower Showdown.
Dean Wade can go for 34, or he can go for 4. He's a guy.
He's been
that,
a lot more consistent this year.
He has, but. If he plays well and Barry Brown plays well, I'll go K-State. Just stir that Big 12 pot, you know? Just get it going. Jake's not looking at me anymore.
Jake's visibly angry.
Jake's done.
No, I'm
you
not.
You thought
visibly.
He was going to pick Kansas. You buttered him up the whole hour,
no.
And then he just...
He's a Missouri guy. Why would he ever pick Kansas?
Oh, that's right.
Why would he ever pick Kansas? I'm just reading texts from people.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you a text right now. Back after this. Thank you, Jared Sutton. Back
thank
after
you.
This on Sports Radio 810 WHB.